You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepthi Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Welcome back to Tech Etc., your favorite tech podcast, where we come every week with not just our views on the latest incidents and happenings of the tech industry, but we also look to go beyond just what's making news. This week is a pretty interesting mixed bag. Leslie, we were just talking about, you know, all the things to discuss a little while ago. And I think this week's charter sort of seems to be like the most mixed bag of things. We have a new ministry that's been formed. So we've got new ministers who will head the next, hopefully 5 years of, you know, what's going to happen about technology in India. We've got a bunch of laws that are suspended in the middle of all the progress. And we've also been told by certain somebodies that what we are observing this week, or I think next week, I'm not very sure, is World Doctors Day. Wow. Which is a day for us to, well, say thank you to all the doctors, supposedly.
Of course. We all are patients in some way or the other.
In some way or the other is just about correct. So we'd also thought taking this opportunity to speak about health tech as a sector and a wide variety of technologies that is supposedly making pharmaceuticals, medicines, and medical technologies and medical practices better, faster, safer.
And your lovely wearables, all your glucometers, your blood pressure checkers, etc., etc.
I really want your take on how much you trust these machines. But before that, it's a very contentious topic. So before we get to that, there has been a new ministry. The new cabinet ministers are here. Of course, Ashwini Vaishnav has retained the Ministry of Electronics and IT. But the telecom ministry has gone to Jyotiraditya Sindhia. We also have a new Minister of State, Jitin Prasad, who's here. And with the new ministers on board, some of the 100-day plans have been put out. One of them being that the new Telecommunications Act, which was notified in 2023, which cleared the parliament last year. We've been told that the first 100 days of the government will see the rules under this act being passed, and which will mean that the new Telecom Act comes into force, which also means that SATCOM services can potentially start operating. Because hopefully once the rules are passed, the SATCOM spectrum allocation will happen and the services will begin. And on that note also, the much contentious and very interestingly named Digital Personal Data Protection Act, or the DPDP Act, which was India's first sort of dedicated tech law. And there's been much contention around it, much consultations around it. The law was finally passed last year, but we're yet to see its rules come in, which means that the law is yet to come into force. But those rules as well are expected to come through in the first 100 days of this government. With all of this, if you want to summarize or sort of make things simple for our listeners, Leslie, is that the privacy law, India's first dedicated privacy law, is going to come into effect hopefully in the next 3 or 4 months. And the satellite communication services will start operating. Your views on that, what do you see these updates to be like?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting from the point of view that we are talking about the new telecom bill. And if you look at the acts that it's replacing, it's the Indian Telegraph Act of 1885.
Yes, 1888 or 85,
1885,
yes.
The Indian Wireless Telegraphy Act of 1933, and the Telegraph Wires, which in brackets says Unlawful Possession Act, that is 1950. So they're such archaic laws. I mean, I don't
yes,
think, forget Gen Z and Gen X, even baby boomers won't be able to, you know, relate to most of these acts. They are extremely ancient and archaic acts, and this should have been revisited, but I'm glad that it finally is happening. Of course, I don't know whether messaging apps have been kept outside the purview. I think you yourself had written about it.
So that is something. OTT services are outside of the purview of
yeah. So that's an interesting thing, you know, because if you remember under the this act, basically we used to have something called VOIP, the Voice over Internet Protocol.
And right.
The point was VOIP was a very potent technology, and most of the landlines that work in offices work on the VOIP part of it, but they are not connected to the PSTN, which is the public switched telephone network. So you basically cannot,
right.
That's the only thing, but it's a potent technology. So it works on a kind of intranet out there. So yeah,
right.
I think the telecom bill, so bluntly, it's good. It's good for the spectrum for SATCOM services, including TV broadcast. I think you yourself have written about.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's something good. Let's see how it progresses. The telecom bill, yes, is extremely significant, but I think more important from a user point of view is the digital, personal data protection bill, the DPDP.
Yes.
I like a DPDP. They're typically, you look at WhatsApp and say, I love your DP. And you're saying DPDP.
This is double DP. You've got
double
two DPs.
You can call it a double dip. So
yes.
So this double DP or the DPDP Act basically is a long-awaited act. I mean, everybody looks at it because even today, in the context of your doctor's day, we are going to talk about, invariably, you are going to talk about personal data, the use of personal data and the misuse of personal data. It's going to be extremely important. So, yes, I don't think this current government is giving us any sense of what will happen to the Digital India Act, which is also was supposed to happen after the 100 days of formation of the government. If you remember, we all wrote about it.
Right.
Now, that is something, there seems to be a little of a silence around it. Let's see if that is resurrected once again. I would be keen to understand that. And of course, more important is what happens to the AI, whether there are going to be any guardrails around AI, because everything is connected.
Interestingly, it's the Digital India Act is what is supposed to sort of define some of the guardrails around AI harm. At least that
exactly,
is what the initial consultations had seemed like.
Let us see when that comes to. We will keep our ears to the ground.
Right. Absolutely. But as you said, we should switch over to the topic of this week, which, as we are told, we are celebrating doctors. And as we celebrate doctors, I want to sort of take this opportunity to sort of look at the entire healthcare as an industry. And invariably...
Just hold your horses for a minute, because I have something to say about this Doctor's Day. I mean, we may agree with a Mother's Day, a Father's Day, a Doctor's Day, a Patient's Day, or whatever day it is, whether it's a Monday or the Tuesday or the Thursday. That's really immaterial at this point in time. But, I have fond memories of my family doctor. I was born and brought up in Pune. And I had this lovely, he was a bald-headed, very very erudite person, a man of great learning, and at the same time, his name was Dr. Dias. We only knew him as Dr. Dias. So,
right.
But the best part of it was, regardless of whatever you suffered from, whether it was fever, whether it was diarrhea, whether it was jaundice, whether it was...
Absolutely.
Whatever the disease be, he had only one bottle with a yellow-colored, it was very bright yellow-colored kind of medicine. And he used to give us in that bottle. And it was sweet. So it was literally, a sugar-coated kind of liquid that was there. And we used to love it. So we used to love going to the family doctor. And he knew everything about us. He knew everything about us. He did not require data analytics. He did not ask us for any data. He did not ask us to fill forms. He did not. But he knew the full family history of the whatever, 100-odd patients that used to go to him. So I remember Dr. Dias so well in Pune. And of course, there was another equally good doctor called Dr. Rajori. And, some two, three kind of. But these were all family doctors.
Right.
The reason I'm bringing this point up, because you are talking about health tech, and if you go to countries like the US and especially in Canada, where I have lived for a long time, it's very difficult to even get a family doctor. It takes you 6 to 8 months even to be assigned a family doctor. Even after that, you're not too sure whether you'll get one. So in that context, these health tech startups that we are talking about, the kind of remote stuff, etc., that makes a lot of sense. That's the brief, you know, I wanted to give.
Right.
Because sometimes the younger generation may not be able to relate to most of the things that happened in the
just world. The idea of a family doctor, absolutely. In fact, you know, when you mentioned that, you know, this the bit about being assigned a family doctor, you know, my early memories was that our family doctor was someone who was friends with my father for a long time.
Oh, yes.
And that person invariably became our family doctor because he knew our entire family inside out.
They knew every secret of yours, you know. They knew your financial health. They knew what you did in your personal life. They would also give you marital counseling. They would advise you on how to raise your kids. They would tell you about, you know, in fact, actually, if you go and see a doctor, they would say, oh, you're not being good to your parents. You're not being good to study.
Definitely.
Have you been studying? So it was a very good, you know, a kind of a bond that was what developed between the doctor and you. When I said Definitely. Assigned, I meant in countries like Canada. If I'm not mistaken, it's even in the United States. You are there because of the social security net that you have, because healthcare is supposedly free out there. So
right,
because we should have, you get a health card, so everything is free. So the doctors charge you, you know, the doctors charge the government. They bill the government.
Right.
Don't bill you. You just basically pay for the drugs. Even that can be covered with insurance. Insurances, medical insurance is high out there. But healthcare typically is kind of free. But you need to be assigned, as I said, a doctor. And that process itself takes you about something anywhere between 6 months, sometimes even a year, sometimes even more. So, yes.
Pretty complicated by the sounds of it, at least by what we are used to in India. But that brings us to, you know, Leslie, the modern day healthcare or health tech, as we've come to know of it in the recent days. You know, everything is tech nowadays. You know, I mean, there's no simple finance, it's fintech. There's no simple education, it's ed tech, and of course, health tech as well. And one of the recent, I remember, I had recently attended this particular session where a number of these health tech startups were a part of. And they were speaking about how to leverage, of course, there were a lot of terms and jargons involved, for instance, non-personalized, anonymized, and so on and so forth. But the central theme seemed like, you know, every single healthcare provider needs a huge barrage of data. Personal data from everything. The moment you download any of the popular health tech apps, you sort of fill in all your details, and the benefits they offer you seem tangible, right? I mean, you sit at home, you can sort of do a virtual appointment, you'll be assigned a doctor in about half an hour who will get on a virtual consultation with you. You're in the privacy of your home, so you're not traveling, you know, you don't have to wait at a clinic, you don't you know, the whole nine yards. But and you can also shop for your medicines. You can get your tests ordered there. You can get your tests ordered at home. But there is a clear sort of transaction over here, so to speak, in the sense that you end up paying for it with your data, I guess, as well as money. And there have also been sort of concerns around these health tech companies using your personal data and potentially selling them to insurance companies who can absolutely misuse sensitive personal data to hike up the medical premium that you might have to pay, and then might even refuse to pay a large chunk of your hospitalization bills at a later date. So how do we trust that technology, or can we even trust that technology has really made healthcare better?
Yeah, I think one thing very important to remember that any healthcare business or health tech care, you know, the health tech kind of businesses that come in the healthcare segment, anything associated with technology, to begin with, they're all businesses. So let us be clear that they're here to make money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So just for the benefit of our listeners, there are about more than a little over 11,000 health tech startups in India. Yeah, 11,000. You heard it right. And, you know, the top names that we always talk about, like Medibuddy, Tata 1MG, PharmEasy, HealthCard, CureFit, Practo. And in fact, actually, what I mentioned was there are about five unicorns out of this healthcare tech startup. And unicorn, for those listeners who do not understand it, this lingo is basically, it's jargon for any company, any startup that has a valuation of $1 billion and more. So now just imagine that these guys are all valued over $1 billion. Like if you just look at so the first unicorn in India was, it is something called, I think it's a Gurgaon based or a Noida based, I think. So Noida based health tech startup. It was called, it's called InnoVacare. Innovacer, or whatever, however you want to pronounce it. And they have reached a total funding of about $390 million till date. Okay, so you can get an idea of how it works out. So Medibuddy is $192 million. Tata MG, I'm just looking at some of the figures from Traxion. So Tata MG is $231 million. PharmEasy, $1.75 billion have been raised. HealthCard, $224 million. CureFit, $665 million. Practo, $251 million till date. The whole health tech market in India is almost like $5 billion in 2023. And remember, most of after the pandemic, when digital health, etc. became clear about it.
That was the fillip, yes.
Absolutely. And coming to your point, if you remember, so these are the good side of health tech, where they are doing a lot of work. Now, for instance, if you look, I mean, you are familiar. You, in fact, were telling me about Practo in the morning, remember, when we were talking.
Right.
Now, you look at Medibuddy. It's a platform to search for healthcare providers. All of them more or less have the similar kind of business model. Tata 1MG is an online pharmacy with doctor listings, teleconsultation services. PharmEasy, as the name suggests, is an online pharmacy. It sells medicines, diagnostics, telehealth online. HealthCard is for health, sport, nutritional. CureFit is for digital and offline, blah, blah. And along with that, if you look at the kind of a major failure in this segment would be something like Pristine Care, which we had written about, if you remember that.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you remember that just recently they are again back in the news for having laid off some 120 people. Okay, that is...
What happened with them, I wonder?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense that they... I think I'm not going to get into the whole thing because Mint has done a whole detailed research on that. Correspondence, I think it was Ranjini, Raghavan and Sneha, I think they had
that
story. So I think, basically they also raised a lot of money. I think about something like almost like $177 million across five rounds. And they have been exiting from cities, discontinuing categories, etc. You know, so a lot of stuff is happening out there. Now, you know, talking about the kind of data, I think one is, of course, from a business model, if you remember, a lot more is happening, because what health tech companies are doing is a boon, because we are talking about Doctor's Day. So the connection is very clear. They are giving you doctors on tap. I think it's a lovely service. I have no problem with the idea. But this is exactly what edtech companies also try to do. They are giving you a teacher on tap. Many of the edtech companies, unfortunately, have bitten the dust. So did fintech companies. But there are also some very good companies in the edtech sector. And some companies now, of course, in the health tech sector, we're finding them that they're making life very easy for the for urban users. Now, imagine we were discussing in the morning itself. Today, if you want to get a medicine, you don't even have to go to a medical shop.
Absolutely.
If it's a reasonably sized medical shop, the pharmacist will have it delivered to your place if you're in the vicinity.
Absolutely.
These guys who are online are doing the same thing. It's like the Zomatos or the Swiggies of medicine. But I think more important is connecting you with the right kind of doctors and the real expertise. That is important. And, you must actually tell me, because along with the kind of variables that we use, whether it's a glucometer, whether it's those for blood tests, whether it's for heart rate, whether it's you covered the Apple Watch, for instance, the kind of stuff that the Apple Watch was doing, and we used to discuss that, the digital twins that we were talking about, remember?
Right. So, I think digital twins is a fascinating piece of technology, which can actually tangibly improve medical research. I mean, I know that the National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences is using digital twins to try and study schizophrenia and try and understand the impact of electrical impulses on specific areas of the brain to change the way bipolar disorder, or at least see if they can impact the way bipolar disorders get affected and schizophrenic patients get affected. And
TCS did that, if you remember. I had written about it. TCS was building a digital twin of the heart of an American marathoner called Dace Linden. Dace Linden was the guy who participated in the New York City Marathon and in 5th November last year.
So, right.
And this digital biotin provided Linden with real-time data on how her heart functions and responded to different conditions when training and for running marathons.
Right.
That I think is extremely important. But, and you know, the digital twins, that now that we are talking about it, they can complement the variables that we are speaking about. So,
yes, absolutely.
Not happening together.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, on that note, you know, variables for that matter, even consumer variables, they seem to have gotten better over time. I remember when the first set of smartwatches came out, the heart rate readings were not really, you know, on point. During COVID, there was this entire craze for blood oxygen monitoring. A lot of smartwatches would show that your blood oxygen level is like 70%.
Oh, yes.
Which, if at any point of time, if you face that, you should have been at the hospital. But, you know, these things have started improving, because of late, at least for an Apple Watch or a Samsung Galaxy Watch, given that these two are the sort of more popular slash reliable smartwatches in the market, these seem to have gotten like the basic stats more correct than not. And in fact, I was recently at Apple's WWDC, and one of the things that they mentioned that will come to the next generation of watchOS are an increased number of analytics and vitals, so that even you as an average person, if you want to run a marathon, or even if you want to track, you know, changes to your resting heart rate, the watch will be able to track that, and it'll alert you when your resting heart rate starts increasing, which is generally an early sign of a heart attack and things like that. So it is safe to say that when it comes to these hardware technologies, they are making healthcare better in a lot of ways. But the fear remains that, you know, with all this data at hand, how would this impact the cost and affordability of healthcare services in public? You know, if an insurance company gets their hand on your resting heart rate data for the past 1 year, they can use that to say that, oh, you did not deliberately take an action, and so your premium should be higher, or we shouldn't be paying for your hospitalization, and things like that. Don't you think that could be like a sort of concern?
Yeah, as I said, there are the positives that I see here clearly are the, you know, if like for instance, telemedicine. Now, we are talking about wearables and affordability, but for an urban audience, where the salaries are much higher than in rural areas. We know that most people live in villages. Like in India, 70% still live in villages without access to even basic, you know, healthcare. Now, for instance, if doctors can provide those kind of services, even remote surgeries for that matter of fact, and which is what they are trying to provide, and they have been doing it, you know, ambulance services where, say, for instance, they could use all these technologies and in the ambulance itself provide many, maybe a digital twin with an oximeter, with oxygen cylinders, and basic stuff. You know, it doesn't have to be pure tech as such. It could be a mixture of offline and online kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
But talking about trust, I think there are two aspects that I would like to, you know, raise out here. One, if you look at, you know, a simple weighing machine, a digital weighing machine, you buy a digital weighing machine for $300 and you buy one for say $1,000.
Right.
You'll find that there is actually a difference. One will show your weight differently, the other one will show your weight.
Right.
They're not accurate. So the point is, do I really have to pay extra for an Apple Watch so that I can get an accurate reading? Because when you're dealing with health, you cannot afford to have that even a difference of
Absolutely.
Only speech that we say in Hindi. I love the
right
thing. So you cannot have any, it has to be extremely accurate out there.
Right.
So the accuracy will sort of, build in trust. The second part is, of course, the data that we're talking about, the kind of personal data. And this is where that PPDP Act that we're talking about should come in force. What kind of data can the healthcare companies use, and what kind of healthcare? See, they will not be able to function without data. Let's be clear about it.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, how on earth will a healthcare company be able to, diagnose you without understanding what your data? So the more data you provide, the more accurate. But will they misuse the data? That is the big fear. Tomorrow, as you also raised that question, whether that data can be sold to insurance companies, where insurance companies
Absolutely.
Increase the premium. And this is not something unfounded, because this has happened. That's why people are raising these
Absolutely.
Questions.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you could find your personal data in many fintech companies, I remember we used to have our personal data with the chanawalas.
All
those forms that you fill and you have submitted to banks. Suddenly,
Aadhaar card, photocopies being used to serve bhel.
We found it with Raddi, with the chanawala, with bhelpuri walas in Bombay and all those places. And So it depends on where you're living. So we have encountered those kind of things, and that's the reason that we raise these concerns time and again. So yes, trust, accuracy is extremely important. Misuse of data cannot be afforded. And especially when you're dealing with life, because you're dealing with human lives at the end of the day. So there is no simple, there is no room for error.
Right.
Period.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe it's time for us to wrap up this episode. But before I go, I just want to touch upon this one particular experience that I had at a technology conference about a couple of years ago, where I had chanced upon an ambulance which was retrofitted and modified with network modules and made fully capable. And it had full screens and everything, and they claimed, low latency connectivity. And it had become fully capable of conducting a mobile surgery on the go, a life-saving surgery on the go, with the main doctor being located somewhere remote. And we've also heard of multiple trials. AIIMS has been conducting trials of remote surgeries using low latency 5G, captive 5G modules and so on. So I think while these technologies do remain pretty expensive right now, these could probably make the biggest difference to, the entire world of doctors and the entire world of healthcare for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, health and tech have to go hand in hand. But as I said, as with any other technology, you have to have guardrails around it. And these efforts and these discussions always, because... just as ChatGPT or any of the LLM-based chatbots or the voice assistants and the AI-powered voice assistants and even our laptops, our smartphones, etc., are assisting us to become more productive, it can also make us very dumb and lazy.
Yes.
Similarly, absolutely. For doctors also, they're giving them a lot more tools in their hand. It's an additional tool. Remember that the doctor anyway used to use his knife, used to use the scalpel, used to use all these. Now they have other digital tools also on hand. So I think they'll hopefully they'll become better doctors. And and as far as our data is concerned, they'll take care of our data. I'm a techno-optimist.
Right. Yeah, I think we're both techno-optimists over here. So we'll hope that the entire world of healthcare only becomes better and better. And technology, with every other field.
Not to forget the villages where 70% of the population lives.
Well, the hope is that, most of the connectivity and technology will start trickling down to their end as well. Although I don't know if they need it. They still trust the old school way of heading to a doctor.
I think, as I said, you have to bring everybody up to speed at some point in time.
Yes, remote surgeries and remote doctor consultations, that can definitely improve healthcare in a country like ours where a lot of lesions remain unconnected.
See, on a lighter note, after planet Earth, where do we go? Everybody wants to go to Mars. So everybody has to learn about space rockets, right? Your favorite subject.
That is very true. Which brings me to the end of this episode, brings us to the end of this episode. And in the next episode, we are going to touch upon rockets because there are a few very interesting stories brewing on the Indian space sector. And it's definitely worth speaking about as well. But until then, it's a goodbye from us. And as always, the invitation remains open for you to write to us about anything and everything that you'd want to touch upon. Even if you want to sort of have an impromptu discussion about the ongoing Euro 2024 football tournament. But until then, it's a goodbye from TechCetera. Thank you so much for tuning in. See you next time.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint TechCetera.
You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.